It's easier that way.
We'll call the meeting of Senate State Administration to order on this 27th day of January, 2021. Today we'll be hearing Senate Bill 130 and Senate Bill 107 in that order. State Administration Committee requests that anybody that testify, please sign in. Please silence your cell phones. If you must take a call, please step outside. If you wish to give a testimony, sign in again. Two signatures are better than one. The following bills, 130 and 107, will be heard. So we'll start with Senate Bill 130. Oh, you want to do roll call too?
How about after the meeting?
Sure.
Vice Chair Vance?
Here.
Vice Chair Bennett?
Here.
Senator Cuff?
Here.
Senator Ellis?
Excused.
Senator Fox?
Here.
Senator Osmundson?
Here.
Senator Sayles?
Here.
Chairman Carey?
Here. Senator Manzella, would you like to introduce your bill?
Thank you, Chairman Carey, members of State Administration. I am Teresa Manzella, Senate District 44, which is the north end of the Bitterroot Valley. And today I bring for your consideration Senate Bill 130. The title is an act revising laws related to campaign finance complaints, requiring that a person alleging a campaign finance violation have firsthand knowledge of the violation, requiring the commissioner to provide the response of the person accused of a campaign finance violation along with a complaint made public, providing definitions and amending sections 13-37-111. So, with that, it's a pretty simple bill. The bill does two things. It will require that complaints made about campaign finance violations be based on personal firsthand knowledge versus hearsay or gossip. And secondly, it will require our responses or the responses to the complaints be publicized with the complaint. In full disclosure, I am using my own personal experience as the genesis of this bill, and I received an aggressive, lengthy complaint that was filed against me on September 1st, accusing me of a crime, the crime of breaking a law. And the person who filed the complaint was not present when the alleged crime was committed. So his account of the incident is based on hearsay or gossip. So I had to go through the election cycle. The complaint was filed on September 1st. So I had to go through the election cycle with a very aggressive, accusatory complaint open for public review on the COPP website. And I made a response to the complaint, but that complaint or that response is not available for public review. So it is my opinion that we need to change that. We owe it to ourselves to do so. And so this bill will require that our responses be displayed so at least the public parties interested can see both sides of the issue while the commissioner investigates the process, investigative process is conducted. Now, I want to make it perfectly clear that this is not a I hate the COPP bill. The ladies who work in the office have been absolutely wonderful to work with. They've always been gracious. They've always been extremely helpful. As you're all well aware, I'm sure the accounting system is the most, well, maybe you won't agree with me, but in my opinion, it's the most unintuitive, unuser-friendly accounting system that I've ever worked with. But that's not their fault. If we want to change that, we're going to have to appropriate funds to do so. And they are always helpful about working through whatever questions you might have. And I also want to make it very clear that I think the appointment of our new commissioner has been a very good thing. I feel that the vibe has changed from adversarial to far more customer service, and I really, really appreciate that. And And I have discussed my intention with the commissioner concerning this bill. And he had some resistance to the firsthand knowledge portion of the bill. And I'm going to allow him to explain that to you. He's here. I'm sure he will be doing that. But he was in full support of displaying our responses or our rebuttals to the complaints. We have a difficult job, and the vast majority of us do it as a public service because we hope to make our state government better. We make friends and we make enemies in the process, and as a result, sometimes these complaints get lodged more as weapons than for any other reason. But with that, Mr. Chair, I will sit down and allow the proponents and opponents to speak, and I reserve the right to close.
Thank you, Senator Manziel. Are there any proponents in the room? Proponents. Seeing none, are there proponents online for Senate Bill 130? Seeing no opponents online, or proponents online, we'll move to opponents. Are there opponents in the room? Commissioner Megan.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, can I pass out some?
Yes, you may.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, Jeff Mangan, M-A-N-G-A-N, Commissioner of Political Practices. I'm here to respectfully oppose Senator Manzella's bill. As Senator Manzella said, she did call and speak with me while drafting Senate Bill 130. The senator discussed the thought of firsthand knowledge, the firsthand knowledge requirement that you find in the bill, and asked for my feedback. I explained while it's certainly a policy decision of the legislative body, I would argue to allow my office to do their job. And we had, and then it went on to explain how we, how our office works. I thought we had a very good conversation, and I certainly appreciated the senator for providing me the opportunity to provide feedback and input on her process in drafting the bill, and it was greatly appreciated. Let me start by saying the CPP receives hundreds of questions via phone and email each election cycle. Many of these contacts are what we would consider almost informal complaints. This person is doing this. What can you do? What should I do? Etc. Our goal is to seek a remedy if required without that issue moving to a formal complaint. And as you can imagine, and I think many of you know, that's exactly how that our office operates, and particularly in the even years between February and November, our phones are always ringing and our emails are always full. In 2020, Montana had approximately 1,200 candidate and committees file. In 2020, we had 56 complaints accepted and 12 finance complaints rejected. Of those 56, 40 were candidates, and of that 40, there were 27 specific individuals from all those candidates. So we had some candidates that had multiple complaints against them, and you can, I'm not going to talk about any specific complaint or just talk about complaints in general, but you could imagine that some of the more high profile races, statewide races, may attract more complaints. And 16 involved committees, and of the committees, there were several that were duplicative. If a concern is publicity of a complaint being brought, Senate Bill 130 will not stop such a complaint from being public. A complaint upon receipt to our office is considered lodged, and in this day and age, many complaints are made public before my office even receives it. As to a complaint response, responses are public and available upon request. As Senator Manzella noted, responses are not placed on the internet. I'll go into that in a little bit more detail here in a minute. As drafted, the bill appears to require a response be made available with complaint, meaning we could not release the complaint until a response is provided. I do not believe this was the sponsor's intent, but I think a strict reading of that one could have that interpretation. Responses, like complaints, are often made public by others, often before we see them. Senate Bill 130 potentially limits the ability of the public to file campaign finance complaints. Interested members of the public, opposing candidates in political committees or similar organizations may be hesitant to file otherwise reasonable or actionable campaign finance complaints because they do not think they have the firsthand knowledge of the alleged violation. The commissioner expects disputes as to what types of evidence or documentation used to support an alleged violation would or would not qualify as firsthand information under Senate Bill 130. For example, a Facebook post or a social media post. One could argue it is firsthand knowledge because I saw it. One could also argue someone else posted that for me. It was someone else in my campaign. It was Facebook. It was the platform itself, so on and so forth. SB 130 does not provide any sort of process, mechanism, or test for settling such disputes should they arise. Senate Bill 130 would require the complaint to certify to the commissioner that the actions complained in the complaint are written or within the firsthand knowledge of the complaint. If there are accounts of witnesses of an event, the COP staff would be required to investigate the complainant as well, and that's one of my biggest issues with SB 130. It doesn't add an additional workload to the COPP. It will slow down processing of complaints, particularly those close to an election. Finally, there are 13 campaign finance complaints pending with the COP. Attached as supporting evidence to those complaints are campaign finance reports, social media posts, campaign mailers, campaign websites, pictures of campaign signs, and newspaper advertisements. These are representative of the types of evidence the COPP receives with complaints. The commissioner assumes that all of these sources are considered to be within the firsthand knowledge of the complainant as described by SB 130. However, we believe that further clarification to include that evidence needs to be placed into the bill. It needs to be specific. Additional examples of problematic items include documentation often includes what's not there. Let me explain. For example, the lack of disclosure of a contribution or evidence. We're asking citizens to basically prove a negative, first-hand negative. I saw a TV ad, I saw a TV ad in February, but it didn't show up on the March report. It's putting that burden on the citizen to the complaint is a potential issue. That's just one small example, but that could happen with contributions, with any expenditure. Coordination is a potential violation, which firsthand knowledge is highly unlikely. Generally, in a coordination allegation, it's the two parties agreeing to do something that might not be above board or might be a violation. We'll do this advertising, you do that advertising, and then you won't have to spend your money doing that. Often the people that are involved in those type, no one's going to have that firsthand knowledge. And finally, if you're following the news, committee classification, I think is an area in which my office is going to be busy in the next couple of years with independent committees and incidental committees. And that's an area that firsthand knowledge is, again, highly unlikely and requires a lot of investigation and a lot of digging. Finally, for your, I included a copy of, let me find it, a copy of the rule. Hopefully, I probably handed all my copies out. The Administrative Rule 4411106 details how my office, and this is how it's gone for years, handles complaints when they come into my office. And I will point you to basically read the entire thing. I know it's lengthy, but Section 3 and then Section 4. That's how we operate. When complaints come into my office, we follow the rules as provided. We follow the law as provided. I'll also say I don't have that rule in front of me. I must have passed them all out. But also in the rule, it also talks about all information that comes into my office is public, and it always has been. In number 6, you'll find that. So we have never not released information when requested. We don't even necessarily require FOIA requests. If someone requests a copy of something, they're generally provided it in an email shortly after the request, unless the request is so large that we have to go through that FOIA process and document copies and so on and so forth. So respectfully, I'd stand for questions. Ms. McNaughton, our chief legal, will address a couple of just legal concerns. And again, respectfully oppose Senator Manzella's bill and be happy to answer any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner Mangan. Further proponents? Are there any opponents online?
Mr. Chair, we have one opponent online.
Ms. McNaughton?
Yes, that's correct.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I was waiting for the unmute button to appear. Can you hear me?
We can hear you fine.
My name is Jamie McNaughton. That's J-A-I-M-E. M-A-C, capital N-A-U-G-H-T-O-N, and I'm chief legal with the Office of Commissioner of Political Practices. There's one deficiency that we found in the bill. It only applies to complaints alleging deficiencies in campaign finance reporting and disclosure. So anything that's found in Title 13, Chapter 37 in Part 2, and that's at line 15 on page 1. It does not include complaints alleging any violations found in Chapter 35, such as corporate or union contributions, attributions, fair notice, electioneering, deceptive election practices, or anything that's found later in Chapter 37, minor party qualification committees. So it only covers reporting and disclosure. It doesn't cover anything else. But more importantly, I'd like to talk to you, it creates a higher standard of proof for a citizen to be able to file a campaign finance complaint than currently exists with ethics or lobbying complaints. So it doesn't address those either. And the firsthand knowledge requirement for campaign finance complaints creates a barrier for citizen filing that does not exist with ethics or lobbying. It also creates a stricter standard for a citizen complaint than is required in a court of law. Under Rule 11 in the Civil Rules of Procedure, when you're filing a complaint in court, a party certifies to the court that the allegations contained in the complaint are, to the best of the person's knowledge, information, and belief, formed after an inquiry reasonable under the circumstances. Our current campaign finance complaints are required to be certified, notarized under that same standard. The difference being that someone can file a complaint in court which allege facts that have evidentiary support or will likely have evidentiary support after an investigation and after discovery. This would create a more restrictive standard for citizen complaints with the agency than is even required by our court system. Another problem is courts and agencies similarly take adjudicative and judicial notice of similar documents and their proceedings under the rules of evidence. So just as in court at the commissioner's office right now, the respondent is provided with a complete copy of the complaint and the evidence attached, and they're able to object to the evidence or to provide clarification in their response. If Senate Bill 130 passes, the commissioner, of course, is happy to post the response tonight on our website. But it might deprive us of the ability to take judicial notice because it wouldn't be in the firsthand knowledge of the complainant of things like campaign finance reports, newspaper articles, social media. And we really do believe that those need to be listed in the bill. So for over 40 years, the Commissioner of Political Practices has accepted complaints and evaluated the contents to make sure that they allege a potential violation of campaign finance law. And if they don't, we dismiss them as frivolous or without a basis in law. If they do, we investigate the campaign finance complaints that have the merit. Overall, about half of the complaints end up in a finding of sufficient facts, and about half end up being dismissed without findings of sufficient facts. So the reason that we're standing up here today in opposition of Senate Bill 30 is because of the potential limit of the ability of the public to file complaints against campaigns and committees. And I am on my testimony. If you have any questions for me, I'd be more than happy to answer them. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. McNaughton. Are there any other opponents online?
Mr. Chair, there are no more opponents online.
Thank you very much, Catherine. Do we have any informational witnesses? Any informational witnesses online?
There are no informational witnesses online, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Senator Sales.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, for the sponsor.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sales.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Senator Manzella, I guess, right, in listening to some of the respectful opponent, was your intent, or actually it might have been the last that we just heard, but concerning Title 1337-2, was your intent to be that narrow, or were you hoping?
No, I truly wanted to be narrow. I did want to intend it to be narrow.
Follow up.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Senator, could you, I guess, express to me how you think you would define firsthand observation or knowledge and what your intent there is after hearing what we just heard?
Yeah. So as the bill states, firsthand knowledge means knowledge of the circumstance or fact gained through firsthand observation or personal experience. Firsthand knowledge does not include knowledge of a circumstance or fact gained through documents that are not in the individual's control or possession. And that was the drafter basically took that liberty. Firsthand knowledge does not include knowledge of a circumstance or fact gained through information provided by another person. And I see these situations just simply being used as weapons, and a simple question of the person who filed the complaint, were you present when this alleged crime was committed? If he was being honest, he would have to say he wasn't. So that, in that respect, that's what I'm looking at as firsthand knowledge. He is actually promoting a story.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions from the committee? I do have one for Senator Manzella. Would you accept amendments on your bill?
I would, yes. Mm-hmm. I tend to agree with the commissioner that line 16 needs a little work. The way it's written, I made available to the public must be accompanied by a written response by the person alleged to have made the violation. I went back and forth on that. I'm comfortable with the way it's written. If there was a response presented, then it would need to be publicly offered.
Thank you, Senator Manzella. One other question. How long do you envision an individual filing a response?
That might
be. Because you have both of those trying to take place at one time, and the response, you know, could be a couple weeks.
Right. Right. So you're saying, should we put a timeline on a response to a complaint to be posted publicly?
Right.
Is that what you're asking? If that would be a friendly amendment, that I would be fine with that. If you wanted to add a date, give it a 2-week window, because the commissioner actually, I believe, gives a window for a response to a complaint. They expect a response in a 2-week period.
Well, it's not. I could answer the question.
Okay.
You want to defer to the commissioner?
May I defer to the commissioner?
Sure.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Chairman, the commissioner office does, when we receive a complaint, depending on the scope and the timing and the length, you know, how many violations are alleged, those type of things, we set anywhere from 5 days to 4 weeks. It's probably generally, you know, 10 days to 2 weeks. But as far as the bill goes in that particular line, my concern was that we don't hold up the complaint being public until the response, you know. I don't know, I didn't create any wording, but, you know, accompanying the response when provided or something to that effect. I mean, I don't think it has to be a date certain if you intend to amend the bill. I don't think a date certain would be would be helpful. I think it would need a bit more broad than that.
Thank you, Commissioner. Are there any other questions? Seeing none, Senator Manzella, would you like to close on your bill?
Yes. Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, committee. I appreciate the hearing. We have a difficult job to do. He also has a very difficult job to do. His time is valuable, and I can see this again being used as a weapon in creating a lot of unnecessary work for the office that doesn't simply need to be done. We owe it to him to be respectful of his time and talents, and we owe it to ourselves to level the playing field where we can, and this is a spot where we can make a couple minor adjustments and do that. The Sixth Amendment is a constitutional right that we have the right to face our accuser, and that's where that firsthand evidence leads to, garnering that firsthand evidence, facing our accuser, and having the opportunity to deal with them on an issue. So I thank you. If you feel it's necessary to amend the bill, be free to do that. We did agree, and he did support the posting of complaints, so I'd certainly like to see that portion move forward, even if we can't find agreement on the firsthand knowledge. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Senator Manzella, and with that, we'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 130. Committee members will now move to Senate Bill 107. Senator Bennett, would you care to open on your bill?
All All right. Mr. Chair and members of the State Administration Committee, my name is Bryce Bennett, and I have the honor of serving people in Senate District 50, which includes Central and Southern Missoula. Today, I bring you Senate Bill 107 to improve voter access, support the work of our clerks, and improve the integrity of our elections. This bill has one small and simple change, as you can see in the document. It moves the end of regular registration from 30 days prior to Election Day to 10 days prior to Election Day. As background, regular registration is the period before Election Day where voters can mail in their voter registration, register at the DMV, or register with a volunteer. Once regular registration closes, voters have to travel to their county courthouse or election office and register in person. This bill seeks to give folks 20 more days to register from home before the law requires them to come to the courthouse and fill out the form. To be clear, there is nothing different about the registration process that you do at your home and mail in and the one that happens at the courthouse. It is the same form with the same language and the same requirements to confirm a voter's address, identity, and eligibility. The forms are also verified and processed by our election administrators in the same fashion. Our clerks and recorders and election administrators like this bill because it gives them more time to focus on the tremendous amount of work they have to do leading up to an election. Instead of having to serve people who are forced to show up to register 30 days before an election, they can focus on preparing and sending ballots, updating the voter rolls, testing machines, and recruiting and training poll workers. Extending the end of regular registration will also help clean up the Election Day voter rolls because voters will have 20 more days to update old voter registration information. This will enhance the integrity of our elections. Voters like this bill because it will give them 20 more days to register to vote by mail or at the DMV, and that means one less trip into town for folks in rural Montana, especially who live far from a county seat. The 30-day limit is an archaic deadline that can and should be shortened for the sake of voters, clerks, and the integrity of our elections. It gives clerks the ability to focus on running strong elections. It's less travel for voters, especially those in rural Montana, and it cleans up the list of voters, which enhances its accuracy. So I thank you for the opportunity to present Senate Bill 107 today. I look forward to a great hearing and would reserve the right to close. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Bennett. We'll now take proponents. Proponents to Senate Bill 107.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Allison Reinhart, R-E-I-N-H-A-R-D-T, and I'm here on behalf of MASS, the Montana Associated Students. I represent students' interests across the state of Montana and support Senate Bill 107 because it would make voter registration easier for students. For some college students, registering to vote can be extremely nerve-wracking and confusing. Many students are on their own for the first time. I know trying to get my own car insurance, registering my vehicle, and registering to vote was a lot to do by myself for the first time. This bill allows time to accommodate any challenges that might arise. Students have a lot on their plates. Managing deadlines, studying for exams, and balancing work and school make it difficult to remember that there are also deadlines to register to vote. If students miss the deadline, they may not have the means or time to go register in person. This bill makes it easier for students from tribal colleges and remote community colleges to register as well. I want more young people to be civically engaged to better promote democracy and the values that we stand for. Look at this legislative body. We have three legislators under the age of 25. Allowing more time for regular registrations will help all Montanans participate in elections. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Reinhart. Further proponents?
Greetings, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Charles Fox. For the record, that's C-H-A-R-L-E-S-F-O-X. I'm a sophomore here at Helena High. I play football, and I'm a cadet airman first class in the Helena Squadron of Civil Air Patrol. And I am testifying on behalf of Montana Youth Action. Montana Youth Action is a member organization made up of liberal and conservative youth and every ideology in between. Our process for inducting Bayless to our platform is rigorous, but on Thursday, January 14th, 100% of our members voted in support of Senate Bill 107. Voting is the core of our democracy, and expanding regular voter registration will allow for more young people to vote and engage. The majority of voter registration efforts targeted at young voters happen closer to the election, and there is no harm done in registering more qualified Montanans to exercise their right to vote. Montana Youth Action believes in making civic engagement accessible to everyone, especially young people. Extending regular voter registration will give more youth, especially first-time voters, opportunities to register. 61% of youth hear election information directly from friends, and in general, they've reported that these conversations occur within the month leading up to the election. Subsequently, within that month is when youth are most likely to pursue registering to vote, which is why it's important to have regular registration extended to be accessible to that younger age demographic. While voter registration can occur year-round, many registration efforts by community organizations, student-run groups, and smaller-scale nonprofits happen closer to the election. Extending the window for regular voter registration helps these groups register more young people and simplifies the process for registration efforts that continue up until the election. Notably, voter registration is not a partisan issue. We believe that strengthening our institution of democracy is a vital duty to your constituency, but gatekeeping the right to vote is not. Regular voter registration is a secure, well-supervised process that already contains a plethora of restrictions and hurdles to begin with, many enacted for the purpose of preventing issues such as voter fraud. With these preventative measures in place and the security of our elections in Montana prevailing with only one documented case of voter fraud in the last two decades, there's no reason not to extend regular voter registration for the purposes explained throughout this testimony. When deciding your vote on this bill, please consider the following. You are registered to vote. Your neighbor is registered to vote. Your colleagues are registered to vote. So are many of your family members. Voting is something so universal and necessary for a healthy democracy that we should be doing everything we can to make it more accessible. This isn't an issue that's tied to any part of your belief. This isn't something that benefits a certain party. It benefits the institution of democracy. Montana Youth Action proudly supports this bill because of the direct, measurable good it will do for youth hoping to make their voices heard. But in reality, this bill helps everyone. And because of that, it's something we hope you can support too. Please vote yes on Senate Bill 107. Thank you. Mr. Chair, I have some materials that I'd like to pass out. Is that okay?
Feel free.
Thank you.
Feel free. And just a reminder to all the opponents and proponents, please remain online or out in the hall for questions after you have testified.
Thank you.
Further proponents.
Hello, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm normally here in official capacity, but right now I'm just here on behalf of myself. My name is Jack Rink. That's R-I-N-C-K for the record. And I guess I normally have prepared remarks, but this bill, I was in the Capitol today, and I'm familiar with the bill. I think this small change is really important. I can just speak to some of my own experience. So I'm a recent graduate of the University of Montana. My focus in my studies and my senior thesis was on local turnout, local voter turnout, and specifically in city council elections between voting wards in Missoula. I'm also an ex-board member and ex-volunteer for MontPERG, that's Montana Public Interest Research Group. So I've done a lot of on-the-ground voter registration in person. On the campus of Missoula, or on the campus of the University of Montana, I've helped people at the polls on election day, just helping them vote, helping them figure out the process. The point here is that I really do care a lot about access to voting, the importance of voting, the importance of public engagement. It's something I study. It's something I plan to kind of revolve my life around for the foreseeable future. So as such, I just think that this is an important bill as an individual, as a person. I urge a yes vote on Senate Bill 107. I really appreciate Senator Bennett bringing this bill forward. he would be my senator, but we're just a couple blocks away from the boundary. But with that, just in my individual capacity to sway you all, I really think this is a good bill. It doesn't seem to change anything significantly other than make voting and voter registration more accessible. So with that, I urge a yes vote. I'll stick around for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Rink. Are there any further proponents? Seeing none, are there any proponents online?
Mr. Chair, we have two proponents online with their hands raised.
Okay. You are welcome to put them in any order you want.
Okay. Our first proponent would be Nancy Leeper.
Chairman Carey, members of the committee, my name is Nancy Leeper. That's spelled N-A-N-C-Y. Last name is L-E-I-F-E-R. And I'm here today testifying on behalf of the League of Women Voters of Montana. The League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan organization. We were founded 100 years ago, which is exciting to have been around that long. And we have been advocates for democracy throughout our whole entire history. The League of Women Voters has worked to strengthen our democracy in many different ways. We urge you to support Senate Bill 107, the primary and general election in 2020. Both use the extended registration called for in this bill. Our election officials have experienced closing regular registration 10 days before the election, and it worked well. Extending the time for regular registration will allow more Montanans to register by mail without having to go to their election office in person. Please vote yes on Senate Bill 107. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Leeper. Other proponents online?
Sorry, next we have Audrey McHugh.
Good afternoon, Chair Carey and senators of the committee. My name is Audrey McHugh. That's A-U-D-R-E-Y-M-C-C-U-E. And I'm the election supervisor in Lewis and Clark County. I support this bill along with the Montana Association of Clerk and Recorders and Election Administrators. This bill would put the deadlines we used last year for the 2020 primary and the 2020 general elections into law. As you probably know, those deadlines were changed with the intent of lessening in-person requirements in response to COVID last year. When we put the 10-day close into practice last year, it really made a lot of sense and worked so well, and that's why so many of us liked it. Since you're being asked to consider whether this should be law going forward, I wanted to give you an idea of the impact it would have on us and our voters by describing what we do now with registrations after the close and how that might change. Something to have in the back of your mind is that the Montana voter registration application is probably the most common application we see in our offices. It's used to register for the first time, to update your address, to change your name, to sign up for the absentee list, or to update your signature. Having one form for all of these purposes is extremely convenient for us and for the voters. As Senator Bennett already mentioned, after the close of regular registration, someone has to come in person to late register. And I'll just add that that means if they're registering for the first time, updating their residence address, or changing their name, they should have to come in person. I would also like to note that there are other types of updates voters communicate to our offices after the close of registration that we need to process. For example, we might need a corrected address from a voter who had an undeliverable absentee or mail ballot. We get new absentee requests after the close of registration, and we get signature updates from voters. We like those different things to come on specific forms for those purposes, but it doesn't always happen that way. After the close of registration, counties process the forms that come in late somewhat differently, but in Lewis and Clark County, what we do is go through each and every one of those forms that are turned in after the deadline. We do this because sometimes we find forms where it really isn't a name or address change, it's just an absentee request. We might also get a new address from someone whose ballot was returned as undeliverable. Or we might hear from someone who has an active voting status and is trying to get that activated before Election Day. When we're going through each of those forms, we do find ones where there's nothing we can process. It truly is after the close, and we can't make an update. So what we do with those is send that person a letter notifying them that their form was received late and explaining that they have the option to come in person for late registration. So that actual form that came in after the close doesn't get processed in our database or computer system. It gets set aside into a pile. That pile grows and grows during that time period. So that's the way we've been doing it in Lewis and Clark County, and I wouldn't have brought it up as our biggest challenge during elections, but when we applied the 10-day deadline this past year, we were like, wow, this really works so much better and just makes so much sense. I think the reason why is we end up going through those late forms again and again, and if we can just get them processed and get those issues resolved as they come in, it streamlines things and we avoid scenarios where we in our office and the voters trying to get their stuff set up become two ships passing in the night. So to kind of give you a personal example, we send the absentee ballots out for a federal general election 25 days before election day. So that's a Friday for a Tuesday election. So let's say that Monday we get a registration form with an address change. That would be the 22nd day after the current 30-day close of registration, which means we wouldn't be allowed to process the address change. What we would do instead is send them a letter telling them their address change form came in too late and setting that aside. So they're going to get that letter from us. Then let's say Tuesday or Wednesday of that week, their ballot comes back to us as undeliverable. Because of the volume of our workload, we wouldn't know that when that ballot comes back undeliverable, we wouldn't realize that we had just gotten an address update from them a few days before and had it sitting in this large pile. So what we'll do is process the undeliverable ballot, mark it in our computer database as undeliverable, and send them a letter asking them to please update their address so we can get their ballot to them. So from that voter's perspective, they just mailed in an address update form to us, and we're now sending them two separate forms talking about different processes for them to be able to vote in the election. From there, it can play out in a number of ways. Maybe they'll come in person, maybe we'll have some phone calls back and forth, maybe we'll dig through that pile of all the forms set aside. In the end, they're going to get their ballot and vote, but if we could have just processed that form the first time, we could cut out some of the back and forth and cut out some of those extra forms. I know we're always going to have things that come up like this, but this will help us out if we can at least streamline some of those. It is, of course, important that we get voters registered in our database ahead of time because we need to print lists for the polling places. But those lists don't get printed until the weekend before Election Day anyways. So I think it will be doable with a 10-day deadline to get those forms processed and still prepare our lists for the election the following week. This brings me to another change we would see if this bill became law. More voters would have the chance to vote at their polling place on Election Day. Right now, if you're not registered 30 days before Election Day, you would have to go in person to late register and you have to pick up a ballot when you're there. This would allow people to register and then vote at their polls on Election Day. The other thing I'd really like from an administrative side is that the 10-day close made messaging and public outreach a lot simpler for us. Voters tend to know an election is coming and they know there's going to be some kind of government forms and processes involved, but a lot of them need help navigating those options. With the 10-day close of registration, it made helping those voters a lot simpler. We could really just push to everybody, within a week of the election, you should go in person to the county elections office no matter what. If you're dropping off your ballot, if you need to get registered, if you didn't get a ballot. It really was an easy message. It made sense to the voters, and so it worked very well. That's what I wanted to share with you about this bill, and that's why I'm in support of it. If you have any questions for me, I'll remain on the Zoom line.
Thank you, Ms. McHugh. Are there further proponents online?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we do have two further proponents online. Our first proponent will be Regina Plettenberg.
Ms. Plettenberg.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Regina Plettenberg, P-L-E-T-E-N-B-E-R-G, and I'm here on behalf of myself, of the Rhode Valley County Election Administrator and the Montana Association of Clerk and Recorders. Our group was very much in support of this. Several did not want to testify, but they did submit letters in support that you should have. and they listed different reasons. I can tell you, I don't want to reiterate, Audrey McHugh did a wonderful job explaining the benefits for our offices. I just want to say that in my county for those last elections, I got no complaints over this change. The voters really liked it. The candidates, everyone really seemed to like the change and the extra time. I really feel it adds to the integrity of our elections because everything is just more accurate. As Audrey was saying, a lot of times we get these updates, we have to set them aside. And this way we were able to implement them, many of us for a mail ballot, but it would be equally as beneficial. In fact, I think more for a poll election, because as she said, we would not have to have as many people come late register. We could get our registers updated, accurate. Folks would not have to make the choice of late registering or voting in the wrong district. And think about that as legislators, having folks be able to vote in the correct district for their for their House and Senate districts. But this is equally as important for school district elections, fire district elections. It'll affect all of them. So I think this is a fantastic bill, and I urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Plettenberg. Further proponents?
Mr. Chair, we have Beth Brenneman next.
Ms. Brenneman. Ms. Brenneman.
Mr. Chair, yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, sorry about that. Beth Brenneman, B-R-E-N-N-E-M-A-N. I'm an attorney with Disability Rights Montana, and we are very happy to see this bill. We do quite a lot of work in helping people in congregate care settings to get registered to vote and to vote. And the current date for late registration is just really quite difficult for us. The late registration requires that people register in person, which many people in congregate settings cannot do. They are bedridden and cannot come out of their setting. And so we will help them. We will. They will designate us as an agent, and we can go and help them with those documents. But that is a lot more complicated than having them do it themselves by mail. So frankly, I think that far more people in congregate settings would vote with this new registration date, and I think that's a really good thing. So we hope that you support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brenneman. Further proponents?
Mr. Chair, that's all the proponents we have on Zoom right now.
Thank you. Do we have any opponents? Are there any opponents in the hall? Seeing none, are there any opponents online?
There are no opponents online, Mr. Chair.
Alrighty. Do we have any informational witnesses? Informational witnesses.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Dana Corson. Dana, D-A-N-A-C-O-R-S-O-N, Montana Secretary of State's office.
Thank you, Mr. Corson. Questions from the committee? Questions from the committee? I do have one question for the sponsor.
Mr. Chair?
I know we heard that the present law is not working, but we have such little information on it. Can you explain why you want to change a law that has been working, especially given the fact that our existing law has already secured fundamental rights to actively participate?
Sure. Mr. Chair, this is just an improvement on what we've seen before. You know, we heard from our clerks and recorders, the people who are on the front lines. You have a number of messages in your packets. The people who actually have to administer this say this is an improvement. This will make it easier for them. They'll have more time to be able to, you know, process ballots, to test machines, to do so many of the things. And I know that all of us have interacted with our local clerks and recorders and election administrators at home and know that especially in those final 30 days, they're incredibly busy. So if they can just have
people mailing in those forms as opposed to, you know, having to process people who show up, or as you heard from Ms. McHugh, having people, you know, send in forms and then they, you know, are doing their due diligence to make sure they get registered. So they're having to actively send them out forms to try to make sure that they know that they have to come in. So this is a lot of extra work that could be done in a way that actually, you know, makes sure that they have more time to do the important work that is due in their office. And the nice part is that we got to test this out. You know, as you heard from our clerks, last year we moved this to the 10 days before, and they all found it to be an improvement. We heard lots of support from all of our clerks and quarters, you know, universally across the board. And I think if we have the opportunity to make things work a little bit better for them, as well as for voters and for this process and the integrity of it, I think we should do it.
Just to correct you, Senator Bennett, we didn't do that. The governor did.
Mr. Chair, that is absolutely fair. We, as the state of Montana, this is the thing that we partook of. But yes, you are absolutely right about that.
Further questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cuff.
Okay, a question for the sponsor.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cuff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senator Bennett. So the proposal is to reduce the late registration period. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
So we'd compress it. It's now
30 days.
30 days,
that's
it would
right.
become 10. Now, how do we encourage people just come in and get registered 30 days, you know, if the deadline is 30, why don't we just get them to come in and do it in the 30 rather than coming in later? Or, as we know, coming in on voting day and trying to muck up, you know, if we talk about this period, compressing and making problems, it seems to me a real problem is folks who are rolling in at after or at poll closing time and continue to vote until what the wee hours of the morning. So how do we encourage folks to just follow the process we have now and get done on the 30-day limit?
Mr. Chair and Senator Cuff, that's a great question. I think your concern about having a whole lot of people show up on election day to register and vote is actually alleviated by this bill because it gives people more opportunities to register earlier to make sure that, as you heard from our clerks who were, you know, on the phone there, that this is actually going to lead to more people voting at their polling location as opposed to having to come in any time to go to the county clerk and recorder's office. So my goal is the same one as you. I want to reduce those lines. I don't want to have people voting on that day. I want to make sure that people can get registered earlier. And by allowing them to mail something in as opposed to having to drive to their county seat, I mean, I know that I live in my county seat, so it's not a great burden for me. But the folks up in Seeley Lake having to drive 75 miles down just to register to vote when you could have just had 20 extra days to mail it in for no reason at all that seems to be articulated doesn't make much sense. So this is something that hopefully provides a little bit of ease for our clerks and recorders and also provides a little extra opportunity for our voters across the spectrum.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
Maybe I'll reword that just a little bit. What is the issue with having voters register late who should have completed registration by 30 days in the first place? They're still going to be allowed to register late. You know, what's the issue just to get them to do it on time?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Cuff, I think it's about defining a new on time, because I think that we want to make sure that people have more opportunities to get that registration in. And I think as much as we can make sure that we're not giving them extra burdens, because I know that, like I was just saying, for our folks in rural Montana that live far away from their county seats, if we can save them a trip where they can just mail in their registration, I mean, they're still getting it in well before Election Day. They still have an opportunity to have their ballot sent to them or to show up at a polling location, whatever that county, or whatever they choose as their voting option. So I think that this is about an opportunity to improve something that we have tested, that the clerks like, because they know that it works for them and it works for voters.
follow up, Mr. Chairman. Something came to mind as we were talking a minute ago about the folks coming in at the last minute. You know, what is it? Have you been down and seen this happen when folks are coming in and standing in line to register and then going to vote? Have you seen that? And can you comment on what that looks like?
Mr. Chair and Senator Cuff, yes, I have seen it. And you want me to...
Well, describe it a little bit and describe how it happens that these folks all of a sudden decide, hey, it's 7 o'clock, I better run down and register before the polls close at 8. How does that happen that all of a sudden we have a great big line?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator Cuff, I can't speak to the motivations behind those folks, but, you know, obviously I'm always encouraged when anybody is going there to vote. You know, I can tell you that I've seen a wide spectrum of people. I know that in 2014, you know, I saw a whole bunch of college students in line. And then in 2016, I saw MAGA hats for days. So we saw a whole lot of people that for different reasons wanted to partake of that. And just to be clear, this bill has nothing to do with Election Day registration. If you all eliminate Election Day registration, this deadline still can exist independent of that. This is something that happens 10 days before, a lengthy amount before we get to Election Day. And it's just about providing that ease for our voters and making sure that our county clerks are able to get some of the support that they need as well in a very busy time.
Another question, Mr. Chairman.
One more question. Oh. Last question.
All righty. So voters presently are able to register late and then still vote. They can vote at the same time. You can register and pick up a provincial ballot and go ahead and vote, correct?
Senator Kerry, or Mr. Chair and Senator Cuff, yes, that's right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Sales.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Mr. Corson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sales.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Corson, can you give me any background on why the 30-day number was picked, the history of the 30-day time frame?
You know, I don't have the actual legislative intent from way back when, but the 30-day, in my mind, has always stuck for being a resident of the district or the election you're going to be voting in. That's one of the requirements as you go through your voter registration form. I'm a U.S. citizen, been here for 30 days, I'm over 18 years old, all my information is correct, and you swear and affirm to that.
Okay. Follow-up?
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Corson, and I know that you've been in your position in previous elections. So with this one being 10-day, did you hear anything about it being moved in your capacity, good, bad, otherwise, how it went?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sales, for where we sit, we don't really collect information like that. The county offices would be the receivers of that information.
One more, so a follow-up. So in your office, then, there was nothing saying this was good or bad? And that you got back from the counties?
And Mr. Chair and Senator Sales, we didn't receive any messaging like that.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions? I do have a question for Mr. Charles Fox. Is he still here?
Someone have to get him. Just go
get him. He's not here. Okay. One question for Ms. Brenneman.
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Brennan, could you help us understand how you can help them?
A youth who needs a higher level of care than outpatient care.
Say what? We have some ghosts in the room. could you help me understand why After 30 days, you can help the individuals with disabilities, but you can't help them so much before that 30-day period.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, we definitely help them before the 30-day period, but I'll say for people in nursing homes and assisted living and other sort of congregate care, registering to vote and thinking about registering to vote is not necessarily the first priority for direct care professionals that help them. So what we often see is when we get closer to the election, and unfortunately sometimes after the close of regular registration, people realize that the people they care for are not registered to vote, but they want to vote. And changing the deadline would help us quite a bit in that right now, with the deadline at 30 days, we have to become their agent. And that involves getting their consent, of course, and having two witnesses sign that document. And then we can help them and go to the election office for them and help them register and deliver their ballot to them and deliver it back. But if late registration was changed and made 20 days later, they could do that themselves. They could mail it themselves. It's not a perfect system, and I'll say it is so much easier when people register before the deadline, but unfortunately, when you have major health concerns, that becomes an issue that is not the top of your mind. You're concerned about whether or not you can still walk, whether or not you can still eat independently, and those sorts of things. So we like to be able to provide that service, but it would be so much easier for people to do it independently if the regular registration deadline was later.
Thank you, Ms. Brennan. Men, any other questions from the committee? Seeing none, Senator Bennett, would you care to close?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for a great hearing. I do appreciate the opportunity to bring this forward for you. You know, I believe that our job as legislators is to try to improve things for the folks back home, for the folks in our communities as much as possible. And I think that the clerks and recorders have told me that this would be an improvement for them. Voters have told me this would be an improvement for them. You know, our clerks and recorders, the people who are on the front lines of our democracy, the people who are charged with ensuring that the integrity is as high as it could possibly be, came in full support of this. You know, we had no opponents to the bill. We had people saying that this was a fantastic improvement, I believe is the phrase that Ms. Plettenberg used. So, you know, for the folks in our clerk and recorder community, as I said before, they've got so much going on near the final days of the election, allowing them more tools and more time to be able to make sure that our elections are always at the highest standards ever, something I know that they take extremely seriously, is an improvement that this bill provides. For the voters, making sure that they don't have to drive long distances just to be able to register to vote. In those final days, being able to mail in that form, it's the same form, same process, same levels of integrity that are required, is something that this bill provides. You know, I think that there's a lot of great aspects about this bill as well, that it will improve the voter rolls for folks. I know that everyone in this committee wants to make sure that we have accurate information when we hand off those voter rolls and give them to people that run our precincts across the state. And giving people extra time to ensure that they can register and update that information. More people are voting at their precincts. Less people are having to line up on election day or in the final days leading up to election day is a big improvement. So I think there's a lot of benefits that come along with this bill, and I think that it would certainly move Montana forward. So I again appreciate a good hearing. Thank you again, and I would urge you to pass.
Thank you, Senator Bennett. And with that, we will close the hearing on Senate Bill 107. Members of the committee, I will leave it up to you if you would like to do executive action on Senate Bill 92 and on 93. Okay. Mr. Vice Chair Vance, I'll let you move your own bills.
Mr. Chairman, I move a due pass on Senate Bill 92.
Senate Bill 92 has been moved. Is there any amendments on Senate Bill 92? Seeing no amendments, Senator Vance, would you care to enlighten us a little, just a snippet on what Senate Bill 92 did again?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 92 basically just says that every election administrator in the state of Montana has to be an elected official so that they answer to the voters. During the hearing, the term local control was used a lot, and I guess to me, the voter is the epitome of local control. You don't have any more local control than that, so that's all I want to do.
Discussion. Vice Chair Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to support this bill, and I have seen this sort of thing happen in my home community, and I push back on their efforts to allow for an appointed election administrator, because I do very deeply believe that we should have people that are accountable to the folks back home, to the voters, to make sure that if you're not running an election with integrity, then the voter should have the ability to kick you to the curb. So I do think that there is sort of a partner bill that I have been chatting with the sponsor of this about to allow for counties to create the new position of administrator that would be election administrator that would be elected to make sure that, you know, we're not, you know, having to force a whole bunch of duties into existing offices, but still making that person accountable. But I think that this gets us on the right track to making sure that that gets done. So I appreciate the sponsor for bringing the bill.
Further discussion on the bill? Question's been called. We will do a roll call vote.
Vice Chair Vance?
Yes.
Vice Chair Bennett?
Yes.
Senator Cuff?
Yes.
Senator Ellis?
No by proxy.
Senator Fox?
Yes.
Senator Osmundson?
Yes.
Senator Sales?
Yes.
Chairman Carey?
Yes.
7 members have voted aye, 1 member has voted no.
And Senator Vance will carry his own bill on the floor.
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I move a due pass on Senate Bill 93.
Senate Bill 93 has been moved. Would you care to explain the bill?
Senate Bill 93 was predicated on this last election, quite frankly, because there were no accommodations made for individuals to watch drop locations for ballots. They could go to polling places, but there weren't any polling places a lot of times, and so they were shut out of the process regarding being able to be at these drop locations to watch the secure dropping of ballots. So that's what this one does.
Discussion on Senate Bill 93.
Question.
Question has been called. Do a roll call vote.
Vice Chair Vance?
Yes.
Vice Chair Bennett?
Yes.
Senator Cuff?
Yes.
Senator Ellis?
Yes, by proxy.
Senator Fox?
Yes.
Senator Osmundson?
Yes.
Senator Sales?
Yes.
Chairman Carey?
Yes.
8 members have voted aye.
Thank you, committee members. We will not be meeting Friday.
Thank you.
Did a yeoman's job today. Next week, we will have a full set of committee meetings, Monday and Wednesday. And again, Friday, we will be off. That would be our last free Saturday. So we'll allow, we can skip that. And if we have to have a little longer session the following week, we'll get our executive actions done there. So with that, we will close the meeting today. Thank you all.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.